John, as I listen to your scenario here, I'm just struck with, if this happened in our own living room, someone had a medical issue such as you described, it would throw us into, stark terror. And here we are in the cockpit of our airplane. I mean, you know, what do we do? I mean, what's your first action? And, we all talk about the priority of flight, fly the airplane. Well, flying the airplane is great, but this guy next to you is dying, and you have to do a bunch of stuff. So I think the priority of what we do first, second, and third is very important, because this is very time critical.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that was the point of this, is that we're going to have to make some decisions. It's going to be very difficult to think clearly in this situation, to organize ourselves, to control our emotions. It may be a loved one. It may be a number of people that could be in this situation. And we're really going to have to get our act together and figure out a way to solve this problem. And that's what we do as pilots, is we solve problems. And there's no one else that the passengers can rely on. Even though we can talk to somebody on the ground, and that may be a very, very big help, talking to a controller can just calm us down, maybe getting a sympathetic ear. But that may not be an option either, depending upon where we are and what situation we're in. So we're really going to have to rely on some internal strength to be able to pull this off.
But, so important, I think, is just as we talk about with almost everything in aviation, is to have a plan, okay? So most of us have not thought about this scenario. Well, by golly, let's do something right now to deal with this. And our first action, and I'm compelled to think, okay, I'm immediately going to tell somebody. I mean, ATC, I got a passenger that might be dying on me. I need help, okay? Get me on the ground where I can get a medical emergency. You know, ask yourself, what do I want? I want to be on the ground with medical care. He can be working on that while you're now turning to your passenger and trying to provide some help. But the longer you delay that first decision, here you are, you might be moving away from the airport that you're right over right now. So quite frankly, you need to get that radio call, get somebody working with you. Cockpit resource management. What do I have? ATC is your first and best friend, I think, right now. The airplane is pretty stable. You're flying along in cruise flight. You have a medical emergency, get help.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so important to communicate that as soon as possible, so that you have the time both for you to work on a situation and for ATC. In this scenario, the farthest airport was only 15 minutes away. That's not a whole lot of time to start building a plan. We may actually wind up getting over the airport and being too high and having to circle down or something like that too. And all that's going to take some time. So the quicker you can get this going, we're all kind of reluctant to admit that we have a problem. And that oftentimes becomes the thing that causes more issues, is that we're reluctant to declare an emergency. We're reluctant to confess a problem. Our passenger may be reluctant to say anything. They say, oh, it's just, something I ate. I'm not feeling good, or something like that. Anecdotally, we all know somebody who had a heart attack and never went to the hospital and those kinds of things. So we got to be upfront with this and address the situation in a very, very timely fashion.
It brings up, one of the biggest challenges we have in aviation, and that is effective communication. And I think to the Captain Al Haynes scenario, where, this guy's experiencing the most horrific emergency that anyone has ever experienced in an airplane, and within minutes, he had brought air traffic into his cockpit, and the air traffic controller had just, they'd linked up so beautifully.
He not only used ATC, but he used everything else that he had on board the airplane. He found out that there was another pilot in the back. Well, in this case, maybe we do have somebody in the back seat, who could help. Whatever situation, ATC may be able to contact somebody. There may be somebody else on a frequency. When you start talking about this, there might be a doctor flying in another airplane who could chime in and help. Another pilot may be able to provide some other information, say, hey, I'm 20 miles away, but there's a hole in the clouds here over this airport. And that's all part of the resource management, but that only starts with, as you said, Bob, the communication, where we start talking about it.
And another thing that you mentioned in your scenario, boy, to have equipment on board that you're not familiar with is inexcusable. But how many of us do that? I mean, you have the oxygen there. What does it take to be familiarizing yourself with that equipment? And so in this case here, could be the difference between life and death. And to have it there and not know how to use it is just unforgivable. But, you know, look in a mirror to find the guilty parties here. We all have, you know, stuff on our airplane. And I'll tell you, that's one thing on an FAA check ride. You know, if it's in the airplane, I can ask you to show me how it works.
Yep. And to practice with it. In this case, we talked about portable oxygen system, but, you know, so many other things, as you're saying, a check ride, people with the portable handheld transceiver that's in the flight bag in the back. You know, you don't know how to use these things unless you actually experiment with them and play with them. For someone who has oxygen, onboard oxygen, have you ever put it on and tried to fly and actually talk on a radio and do those kinds of things? There's no substitute for practice.
You know, most aircraft emergencies, our priority is get the airplane on the ground. Well, getting the airplane on the ground at an airport that has no services for you is not going to help you a bit. I mean, you have not dealt with the problem. So in this case here, closest may not be best.
Exactly.
And that creates another challenge for you with regard to communicating what you want. I mean, you tell air traffic control, I want to get on the ground, closest airport now. You know, that may have compounded your problem rather than helped you.
Exactly.
John, you commented early on in the scenario that you weren't able to determine the illness. It could have been hypoxia, it could have been carbon monoxide poisoning, a number of things, and that's a problem for us because we're not skilled in those areas.
Exactly.
If this airplane had a CO detector in it, that would have given you another data point to help you in this case.
Yes.
And another piece is we're not necessarily familiar with the physical condition of our passengers. That's not usually a question we ask before they go, but given this scenario, I think maybe it's a question I'm going to start asking.
Excellent point, Wally. And related to that, it's interesting to note that Part 135, on-demand air charter, in an unpressurized airplane, the oxygen requirements come into play at 10,000 feet, somewhat lower than Part 91. In other words, this particular flight at 11,000 would not happen in an unpressurized aircraft. You'd have to find another route. Now, there's a reason for that. Every reg that we have, as Bob likes to say, is based on some experience or some history.
Our passengers put a lot of trust in us. Here we are inviting someone to go for a weekend trip and, oh, you know, let's jump in my airplane and off we go. And we have this great adventure. And we take a tremendous amount of responsibility by bringing this person into this environment. There are certain precautions that we have to take into account, and we have to be aware of the responsibility that we have to our passengers in this case.
And that broadens on this area of aviation physiology. You know, we are operating in a very challenging environment at 11,000 feet, and you need to think about that before you get to that environment and have a thorough discussion with our passenger. We've heard that a smoker already starts at 5,000 feet. And so by going to 11, you know, what are you doing to him or her? And what do most pilots know about aviation physiology? Have we done any additional reading on this? The AIM talks about medical issues. I'll bet that's an area that hasn't been opened in many years for pilots. But, you know, aviation physiology is part of our responsibility. The pilot in command is indeed responsible for all these kind of things. And here now, maybe your best friend or a family member, their life depends upon how well you're going to handle this situation.
Another tool that could be helpful in a case like this is the use of the sectional chart. A lot of pilots, when they're flying IFR, simply have the low altitude IFR charts along. They don't follow along on sectionals. And in this case, where you're trying to determine how close the town is to the airport, specifically where the high peaks are, a whole lot of data. If you're following along on that sectional, you've got that information. Sure, air traffic control guy can give it to you as well. That's going to be helpful. But if you're sort of following along, you've already got a picture in your mind of where you're going. And in the case of one of those airports, I've forgotten which one, I looked at it on the sectional. There is absolutely no yellow within 20 miles of that airport. Well, right. That glance could tell you probably you're a long ways from medical help if you choose that airport.
And that's a real downside of today with GPS navigation. And in this scenario, we set it up that even though you may have filed a flight plan that included a bunch of airways and VORs and you kept track, first thing the controller says is clear direct to destination 345 miles away. What's the first thing you do is you put the chart away. You're not going to need it anymore because you're looking at the GPS and you're just watching the mileage countdown, and you can be very easily lulled into a sense of complacency. You're on top of a cloud deck. There's nothing to see anyhow. Why should I bother getting a sectional out and following along where I am?
Yeah, and going to the nearest function, yes, it tells you where the airport is, and it might give you some runway links, but it doesn't tell you information about medical facilities and those kinds of things.
Exactly.
One of the worst skill issues that we have now with technology is this situational awareness. I mean, we can tell how many miles we are from some place, but we don't know what state we're over. I don't care what kind of airplane you're flying, medical emergency, airplane emergency, you may have to land right now. And how prepared are any of us at any time as we're en route somewhere to land right now? You know, in this case here, you're above the cloud cover, so you really don't have an awful lot. So while your sectional chart, you know, keeping track of, and why not? What do you have better to do?
Yeah.
You know, situational awareness, Wally, I think is really, really big. And, you know, remember back when we learned how to fly, what do? We put tick marks on our chart so we always knew where we were. Well, there was good reason for that.
Wally, you mentioned knowing your passengers, and the AIM mentions that low doses of certain drugs such as antihistamines, tranquilizers, sedatives, and analgesics can, through their depressive action, render the brain more susceptible to hypoxia.
Uh-huh. So there's some information that would be helpful.
Very good point that you make in terms of knowing your passenger, particularly at 11,000 feet where we know we're getting close to the range. Where
and that goes back also to the briefing. You know, we're required to do a pre-takeoff briefing with our passengers. And that should be one of the things that we talk about, you know, is we talk about where the fire extinguisher is and where, you know, how to open a door and the seatbelts and stuff. And something else might be, you know, we're going to be at 11,000 feet for 3 hours en route on this. How are you feeling today? You know, just something as simple as that. And tell the passenger, you know, we're going to be at 11,000 for 3 hours. If you start feeling weird or anything, please let me know. You know, maybe I can find a different altitude or something like
that. And letting you know early rather than too late. Hey, let me know right away when you're starting to feel bad. Then I can do something and we can prevent it from occurring as opposed to this case here, which is clearly too late.
Yeah, and that's part of the briefing. Should be part of the briefing.
And let's talk about carbon monoxide, because we all know instances where carbon monoxide has functionally disabled pilots, passengers, and the like. Let's just look at this situation. If it is carbon monoxide, what are some of the things you can do right now to maybe make the situation go away?
Well, know your airplane. Know the configuration. One of the things is maintenance. Know that the heater and the ductwork that's all under the cowling is well maintained.
Which is the most likely source of carbon monoxide.
And at 11,000 feet, it might be chilly. I don't care if it's
might have the heat on.
Yeah, you might have the heat on. Exactly. So know how your heater works. Know that opening a vent is going to bring fresh air in, or maybe it's going to suck even more carbon monoxide in through the heater, those kinds of things. One of the other suggestions that I've seen is to lean the mixture as much as you can, you know, try and get the CO level down.
Most pilot operating handbooks have a procedure.
Yeah.
For a specific procedure for each airplane, and your point is correct. Know what that procedure is for the airplane you're flying.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about, because most people don't have a clue with regard to the point that you made, well, you're going to head towards a military base. And what are some of the issues associated with that? I mean, there might be military operational areas around there. There might be restricted areas. I mean, you know, it may take you a while to go a short distance because there might be intensive activity going on right now. There may be fighters out there just to beam you. And even though you're declaring an emergency, getting that to cease and desist versus send you around it, who knows? I mean, quite frankly, you don't know, but there might be all types of activity around a military base.
Absolutely.
That might make it a good place to go into, might not.
And that's something that, again, you're going to have to take into your decision-making process, whatever time that you have to communicate with ATC and try and get some sense of what you can do. And it may turn out that going to the military base is not the best option.
And especially in this situation where you have a base with a municipal airport in close proximity.
Yeah.
Well, the base, they got medical equipment, they got a hospital, that's good. But guess what? There's this side too. And, you know, that's where you make the big bucks is pilot in command, right?
Yep.
So I actually had a situation where I ended up going into a military base in an emergency. It was not a medical emergency. It was had a rough running engine. So I was coming back from Sun and Fun. I think I was at 7,500 talking to ATC. I'd been droning along for 3 or 4 hours. And then suddenly RPMs dropped below 1,000. Engines started running incredibly rough. So of course, you know, you get that initial jolt. First thing I did is cycle through the mags to see if it was a mag issue. Nothing there. pull the carb heat, see if I had some carb icing, nothing there. So now what am I going to do? Talking to ATC, I said, told him what my situation was. The guy couldn't have been better. He's like, don't worry about it. Focus on flying the airplane. I got you right now. He said, look below your right wing. Can you see that airport right there? Look below my right wing. I said, yeah, I do. He said, okay, head for that. I'm going to take care of everything for you. So I turned towards the runway. I was pretty much on top of it at that point, big, long runway. So I turned towards it and got myself situated. I still had issues. The engine's still running rough, so I pulled the power all the way back, make my way towards the pattern. He told me, I think, just to make a right base, and he'll call a tower. So he told me the frequency. I call tower, and the guy said, this is a military base, but don't worry about it. We get you covered. There's a couple F-18s in the pattern. I scrambled them. They're going to go elsewhere. Your priority right now. So, here I am in a Cessna 172, and I've got the attention of this military base. And did a pattern, landed. Pretty much on short final, I noticed that the power had come back to some extent. So what we realized after was a stuck valve. Had all the emergency services there. I taxied over. Of course, I found out that they had no ability to work on a general aviation airplane at this military base because they work on jets. But anyway, I talked to my mechanic. We determined that it was a stuck valve. It had resolved itself, and I ended up flying to another airport to get services. So anyway, the point is, ATC was amazing in this situation. And, my first thought wasn't, I'm not going to land there because it's a military base. My first thought is get my ass on the ground and let's, figure out the issues later.
And that may be the situation that you have to do here.
Great.
But that's a great story, Mark. And I think it just reinforces the point, though, is, you got to do what you got to do. And ATC is a resource. You're still the decision maker, and you made the decision to follow their instructions. They gave you the information that you needed. They gave you the tower frequency. They gave you the runway to go to. And, you put it all together and you make it happen.
And, just to kind of bring this thing together, I mean, this is a great scenario, John, because it really challenges us to think outside the box. And so we, as the pilot in command, need to be looking, be proactive, be situationally aware, because the situation is always fluid, always dynamic, and we need to be ready.